I ain't got no home, I'm just a roaming round. Just a wandering worker, I go from town to town. And the police make it hard wherever I may go. And I ain't got no home in this world anymore. My brothers and my sisters are stranded on this road, a hot and dusty road that a million feet have trod. Rich man took my home and drove me from my door, and I ain't got no home in this world anymore.
It's 8 p.m. and you're listening to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM and online at cooperadio.org. I'm Sandy Goldman, and tonight we'll be discussing affordable housing, a vital issue in our communities across the province and in the upcoming BC election. We've assembled a candidates panel in the studio and invited a cross-section of community members to ask questions. So I'm going to turn things over to my co-host Robin Puga to introduce our guests.
Thanks, Sandy. And a big thanks to our guests for agreeing to be with us this evening. In the studio, we have David Wong from the Green Party. He's a candidate in Vancouver Hastings, an architect with a focus on sustainable design, an urban ecologist, and longtime advocate on affordable housing issues. Welcome, David.
Thanks, Robin.
And we also have Andrew Wilkinson. He's from the BC Liberals, running for re-election in Vancouver, Quilchina. Andrew has served as Minister of Advanced Education, Minister of Technology, Innovation, and Citizen Services, has a background in law and medicine. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
And David Eby is here from the NDP. He's running for re-election in Vancouver Point Grey. David has been advocating for affordable housing regularly over the past 4 years, both inside and outside the legislature, and also has a background in law and advocacy. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So I'll be the moderator tonight. Each of our candidates will have 2 minutes to respond to questions. We've asked community members to come in and ask questions. And then we'll have a follow-up after each question with further responses. And we're hoping to have a lively and creative discussion here. So Sandy, back to you with our first questioner of the evening.
Thanks, Robin. Tom Armstrong is the Executive Director of the Cooperative Housing Federation of British Columbia and a regular contributor to Each for All. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
I'll turn things over to you with your first question for our panel.
Well, thanks, friends. First of all, thank you to the candidates for agreeing to be here tonight to answer questions on the number one issue in this campaign, which is affordable housing. I'm from the Co-op Housing Federation of BC. We're the voice of more than 260 nonprofit housing co-ops and almost 15,000 co-op homes all over the province. So the question my members will be expecting me to ask first is, by 2025, roughly 4,000 co-op households in BC will lose the rent subsidies that keep their homes affordable because their agreements with the federal government will have expired. So given that housing is now a provincial responsibility, what's your plan to ensure that those 4,000 low-income households don't lose their affordable co-op homes?
And so we drew lots earlier before, and David, you're going to lead us out with a couple of minutes on cooperative housing subsidies.
Well, cooperative housing subsidies, one thing the BC Green Party advocates is a collaborative and cooperative approach to governance. And in terms of subsidies, I think that the,
So this is an interesting subject we've covered a lot on Each for All. The federal government's been covering subsidies for co-op housing for the last 35 years as part of the mortgages that were also covered by the federal government. Those subsidies, as the mortgages are paid off, are disappearing, and co-op communities are in crisis around maintaining the community, maintaining their property, and need to have input to have affordable cooperative housing, just to lay some more context there. Well, maybe I will turn it over to another member of our panel. Andrew, do you want to take a crack at co-op housing subsidies?
Sure. It would have been very helpful to have these questions in advance so we could be more fully prepared, because
there's a lot of context here for sure.
Well, yeah, and we can't really respond in a meaningful way unless we know what the topic is.
Okay, but so the Liberals have
nonetheless. Our party, the BC Liberals, have committed to maintain the provincial portion of the subsidy in order to preserve these affordable units, and will continue to press the federal government to maintain their portion. I think the issue becomes, what is the role of the federal government in housing? And as you say, that has gone through a big transition in the last 20 years. And the co-op housing phenomenon was essentially a federal creation, and now they are abandoning the field. And it's time for the feds to come to the table on this, because my understanding is that operating agreements reflecting about 30,000 units will expire by 2033. So this is a serious issue to be dealt with, and we're going to have to raise it with the federal government more actively.
David Eby, do you want to take a crack at this one?
Yeah, thanks for the question. And this is an issue that's been a high-profile issue, certainly among people who live in co-ops, but not just for them. For cities and for nonprofits involved in advocacy around housing, seeing these agreements expire means the potential for literally thousands of people looking at homelessness, because their rents will increase dramatically and they won't be able to afford where they stay. We're in a housing crisis. We can't afford to lose any of the affordable housing that we have. That's why the BCNDP has committed to bridge the lost operating funding until we can reach an agreement with the federal government on these housing units, because we can't afford to lose this housing. We need this housing. The people who receive those subsidies are looking not at simply moving somewhere else if this ends, but literally looking at homelessness with vacancy rates lower than 1%. And there's a really interesting and important question about co-ops and redevelopment. You know, a lot of the buildings are reaching the end of their lifespan. Not all of them. Some co-ops are really well maintained, but others are facing these kinds of challenges. And I want to congratulate Tom's group for using innovative methods like community land trusts as a way to provide some assurance to co-op members that their properties will, when they reach the end of the building's life, that the property will continue to host affordable housing and provide some assurance to especially seniors and more vulnerable people that they'll be able to stay in community and stay in their co-op community. One of the things that's really unfortunate is that we're losing this co-op model that has worked so well. There were 200 people showed up to a two-bedroom co-op unit that was available, that was advertised. It was $1,200 for a two-bedroom in Vancouver. There was almost a flash mob trying to apply for that space. We need more affordable housing like that. Co-ops are a great model, and certainly there's a role for the provincial government there.
Awesome. Thank you. Tom, do you have any follow-up?
I've got a couple of follow-up questions on broader issues, if we have time. On the day before the official launch of this campaign, the BC Rental Housing Coalition released an affordable housing plan for BC. It's a 10-year plan with a series of specific costed measures that can be implemented immediately to increase rental housing supply, close the affordability gap, and tackle the crisis of homelessness, all through innovative partnerships between all levels of government and the community housing sector. So obviously the province has a key role to play in the housing field. So what's your 10-year plan to create and sustain affordable housing in BC?
Now we're cycling through guests. So Andrew, you're up first here.
Yeah, I haven't seen the report. Once again, it would have been helpful to be advised that we're going to be asked about it so we could look at it before we came here. But nonetheless, the BC Liberal Party is engaged in a big effort to support the housing market. There's a $900 million infusion to create 5,300 units of social housing for people with disabilities, seniors, people recovering from addictions. We've got 24,000 units have been created by this government already. And in terms of rentals, we have 10,000 families on the rental assistance program and 20,000 seniors on the SAFER program. And one of the things that has really jumped out to me in my 4 years of elected office is the fact that we have now 110,000 units of housing waiting for approval on municipal desks in the 23 different municipalities in Greater Vancouver. So there are many factors that go into addressing the housing stock. There's also the phenomenon that my ministry initiated in the last year of coming up with alternative financing models for student housing so that the student demand for housing could be satisfied by a housing model that's affiliated with university campuses, but not on their debt. And that will obviously create thousands of housing units in the years to come, which will reduce pressure on the rental stock.
All right. And David, do you want to follow up?
Sure. One important thing to realize is that the role of the different levels of government, we can't unilaterally as provincial government go ahead and start creating housing without partnerships from the municipal level. And one of the things that we realize that, you know, we can't have an adversarial approach to governance. So the important thing to realize is that it's the municipalities, the cities, that actually govern land use, zoning, for example. So one of the things that we have to have is a strong partnership. And in doing so, we can actually tweak some of the zoning. For example, the Vancouver has a charter that allows this municipality here to actually define what can happen. So in terms of actually looking at a partnership, we would have clarity. The clarity in terms of what the market cannot do. So in terms from an architect's perspective, I can speak and say that one of the problems about speculation is that there is no clarity. So when people come and start speculating on land, it unfortunately can do harm by increasing land prices and affect the cost of land, which affects the cost of building affordable housing. So,
all right. And David, do you want to speak to that as well?
Yeah. The question was about a report that was issued, and it's a really good report, and it deals with something that is really the elephant in the province, which is the fact that the federal government and the provincial government haven't been building critically needed affordable housing, and whether that's rental housing or whether that's co-op housing or whether that's social housing. We're at such a level of crisis in Metro Vancouver that the mayor's report that there's 70 plus homeless encampments in Metro Vancouver, that the last homeless count was 3,600 homeless people in Metro Vancouver. And the report really deals with the fact that we need to do something about this. We need to address it through a massive affordable housing build. So our party's 10-year plan involves building 118,000 new affordable housing units. And frankly, I think that number is a conservative number. The funding for this is going to come from taxing the speculators in our housing market who are buying housing in Metro Vancouver but not paying their income tax here. It's an additional property tax. It's going to fund these affordable housing units across Metro Vancouver. And it's going to be a very big deal. It's been a long time since the government's been involved in this way in building affordable housing. And it is in a response to the cry for help we're hearing from the nonprofit housing associations, and not just in this report, but generally, and also from people in the community who say, look, I can't find a place to rent. I'm working full time. When I was out at Maple Ridge at the Salvation Army shelter out there, the major who was running it told me that the people who were in the homeless shelter in Maple Ridge were actually working, and they were saving up money for down payments, or they were saving up money so they could pay higher rents than they could afford, and they cycled through the shelter. And the people who were living on the street out front of the shelter were the people who used to be in the shelter. Those people with all kinds of challenges, disabilities, mental health issues, addictions that made it difficult for them to find housing. And so, I mean, it seems quite straightforward to me what we need to be doing is increasing our affordable housing supply, not just increasing supply, but increasing the affordable housing supply to address the crisis we're facing.
Thank you. And Tom, did you have anything you wanted to follow up on?
Yeah, there's a lot of talk these days about the challenge of finding a home to own, and a lot of questions about whether the so-called dream of home ownership is dying. But you know, in reality, just over half of all the households in Vancouver rent their homes. And more than one-third of households in Greater Vancouver rent. And vacancy rates are at record lows. Almost one-quarter of renter households in BC spend more than half of their income on rent, which puts them on the edge of homelessness, just one bad break away from being homeless. So my question is, what's your plan to increase the supply of purpose-built rental housing in the province and to make that housing affordable for the people who need it most?
David Eby, do you want to take this one first?
Yeah, I addressed a little bit our plan about building affordable housing, but there are a couple initiatives that are in our platform that are, I think, critically important. They're not often talked about. One is rental-only zoning. We would give cities the ability to zone areas of their cities for rental housing only. And there are a number of cities that have older rental housing stock that's the subject of a lot of speculation because people hope they can tear it down and build condos in place. By giving cities this rental-only zoning, we can provide some certainty that rental housing will be built there and will reduce the impacts of speculation. The other is student housing. UBC is in my constituency. There's 10,000 students on the wait list for housing at UBC. The province is known since Gordon Campbell was the premier that there was a serious issue around not building enough student housing because of the rules applied through the Budget Transparency Act. And Gordon Campbell, in a throne speech, said he was going to fix those rules. Unfortunately, it was his last throne speech before he lost his job because it was never fixed, and it hasn't been fixed. That was 2011. We're now 2017. It still hasn't been fixed. We're told if you just reelect the Liberals, they're going to fix the student housing issue once and for all. Hard to believe that that's a credible statement. I mean, 10,000 students on a wait list for housing means 10,000 students who are out in the community searching for rental housing in the private rental housing market, competing for scarce rental housing when they want to be on campus and they're on overcrowded transit. I mean, there are some really basic things that we should be doing here, and one of them is allowing universities and colleges to borrow the money to build this housing where the rents from the students cover the cost of the borrowing. It's something that was identified as an issue a long time ago and something that needs to be fixed. So everything from taxing the speculators and using the money to build affordable housing to rental-only zoning to building residences for students, this is how you attack a housing crisis, is at every level, and not as we've seen under this government, which is frankly not at all.
Andrew Wilkinson, do you want to speak to the Liberals' plan?
Sure. I talked briefly about the student housing arrangements, and the pilot project is actually getting underway at UVic, so Mr. Eby's skepticism is actually misplaced. And we've got a few other pilot projects around the province that should be getting underway in the near future. I think the elephant in the room, though, is when the NDP say they're going to build in their platform, they say 114,000 housing units. David's just upped that to 118,000. And on the unit cost that we've gotten, I'm sure the architects can confirm this, that's a $21 billion proposition. That's about 10% of BC's GDP that's going to appear out of nowhere to fund these.
Come on, Andrew. Yeah.
And like, so we have a bit of a gap in their fiscal plan of how they're actually going to build these things when there's $21 billion missing from the project.
All right. Maybe David would like to speak to the Greens' platform, or do you have more to say about the Liberals' plan?
Fine. Well, here's how I look at everything. You know, I keep on hearing numbers and everything, but what do these numbers really mean? I look at it from an architect perspective. You can have housing, then you can have housing again. And to me, when you throw numbers and percentage out, it's absolutely meaningless, and you have to come back to what it is all about. First thing we have to understand is that, and it really hasn't been done, is understand what you're doing before you start actually executing your plan. So a social impact assessment, for example, you don't go about destroying existing low-income housing, for example, and then put something else there. I look at the city of Vancouver as an example. In Vancouver's Chinatown, for example, we're talking about putting some mixed type of use buildings in there where the developer would put in 20% social housing in the development. But here you go again, where it doesn't work, because if you look at what has been done with a textbook approach to housing, it hasn't really worked. And I like to speak from my own experience, where I get my fingernails dirty, and we have to see that certain things that has to be done from people actually understand how it works, and you get the proper qualified backing behind it. So to talk about creating more density in housing, I personally would say that we don't mix market housing and social housing. You have to define a complete area and build a purpose-built social housing unit. And the market forces can be very creative in how they can do this. Because when you have a mixed-use type building, you don't have an efficient building. So what happens is that your building cost goes up. And who's going to absorb that? It would be probably taken out by the cost of the social housing.
Okay. Tom, now, did you have a follow-up question?
I could, yeah. And again, once again, thanks to Co-op Radio for the chance to ask these questions, and to the candidates for answering them. We hear a lot about partnerships and innovation today. And while I know we're in a provincial election campaign, I think we would all acknowledge that there's a role to play for all levels of government, and indeed the community housing sector, in creating the kinds of innovations that would produce more affordable housing, a robust supply of housing and more affordable housing. So other than just money, I'm wondering if the candidates have anything to say about the kinds of key contributions they would like to see from other levels of government, the municipalities and the federal government, and indeed the community housing sector, so that we could all work together to make a dent in what we're all acknowledging is an affordable housing crisis in BC.
Andrew, do you want to take a crack at this?
Yeah, this is a long-standing issue, and I think anyone who's about over the age of 30 is familiar with the idea that the federal government used to be actively involved in this space, not only with co-op housing, but with tax policy, things like the what were known in the 70s as MRBs, that were purpose-built rental facilities that were given special tax treatment, and there was a great blossoming of rental construction in the 70s as a result of that federal tax policy, which was later abandoned. And so that generation of federally driven rental stock is starting to disappear, and it's something that we are all regretting. And as I say, we're trying to work with the federal government to get them back on the page of being responsible for some of the housing stock in this country, either directly, as in co-ops, or indirectly through tax policy. And the second thing I alluded to earlier was the issue of municipal zoning and permitting, which it's an apocryphal tale, but it's true. In about 1975, it took 2 or 3 days to get a building permit in cities like Burnaby, and it now takes 18 months. And there was an issue in the mid-80s, which became known as the insurance crisis, arose from a Supreme Court of Canada case called Kamloops and Nielsen, where the court decided that the building inspector could bear some liability when the foundation cracked. And so the issue became, well, municipalities will get spooked by this and become more and more careful, to the point where they're so careful now to avoid liability that they're dragging out the permitting process for years. And this has got to be fixed. I mean, it's an obvious problem that we cannot sit around for 3 years waiting for municipal officials to approve building plans.
Mm-hmm. And David Wong, what would the Green Party do to work with other municipalities and other organizations developing housing?
Well, the BC Green Party, as I said, it's really, I believe, in a collaborative and cooperative approach to governance. The important thing is to realize that we have to incentivize the purpose-built rental housing and just housing in general. And, we have to expedite the permitting, because one of the biggest bottlenecks is the actual permitting. I used to work at the City of Vancouver in the planning department, and 2-3 days to get a permit for a house. Now you're lucky if you get a permit in about a year and a half for a laneway home. And that, again, these added layers of cost doesn't really work. And it's counterintuitive what we're trying to do here. So perhaps there's always looking at maybe tax credits who can help benefit the expedite of affordable type housing. And in municipalities like in the greater Metro Vancouver region, there are also development cost levies. Perhaps the municipal government levels can ease off and back off on some of these charges and allow these home housing projects to move forward at a quicker, more expedited rate.
And to David Eby.
Well, we have a world of opportunities available to us if we want to take the affordable housing crisis seriously. Municipalities have land, the federal government has land, the provincial government has land. There are partnerships that can be forged with the private sector, with nonprofit organizations. And I mean, I think it's really a classic example of the understanding the BC Liberals have of this problem to hear Andrew say, well, you know, there's no way you could create that number of housing units because it would cost a tenth of BC's GDP. Well, no, because you find partners that are out there that are willing to bring to the table really important and critical pieces like land, developers with experience building purpose-built rental housing. And it's how the West End was built. If you are in Vancouver and you go west of Granville Island, a whole mixed-income community built on federal land there, a model for what we should have done far more often in the city, and instead we're selling off our public land to the highest bidder, who often also happens to be a BC Liberal major donor.
Oh, that's nonsense, David. So, you know it.
No, it's not Burke Mountain. Let's start talking with Burke Mountain, where the province gave away land on
Burke
Mountain.
No, that is not true.
It is absolutely true. And
no,
anyone who's curious can Google Burke Mountain and BC Liberals and read about it.
Well,
and
that's the material
we know.
No, David, I think the explanation that's required. In discussion and creative one, too. This has been really interesting how we've been unfolding here. We are going to take a short break for a station identification, and then we'll be right back with our next questioner here on Vancouver Co-op Radio. So back to you, Sandy.
Thanks, Robin. And thanks to Tom Armstrong from the Cooperative Housing Federation of BC for getting us started. You're listening to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection on Vancouver Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, and online at coopradio.org. Let's take a musical break and then return with our Candidates Forum on Affordable Housing.
Took a trip on a bus that I didn't know. Met a girl selling drinks at the disco. Said truth come back when you let it go. Seem complicated cause it's really so simple. Walking down Young Street on Friday. Can't follow them, gotta do it my way. No fast lane, still on a highway. Moving in and out, no doubt. There's a brighter
no time to get down cause moving up. No time to get down cause moving up. No time to get down cause moving up. Check out the crabs in the bucket. It's like flies on a windscreen riding a wall. Square biz clones claim they're having a ball. Feeling themselves just before last call. Tick, tick, tock, tick, tick, tock. Clock strikes 12, clock strikes 1. Smoking gun put these fools on the run. I know it's not that simple. I know it's not that hard. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. Ah, check out the crabs in the bucket. Conniption fit when the microphone's lit. I take it high like a bird on a wire. Retire the fire, I never. Cause I'm just moving on up. Choosing to touch the unseen, craving the clutch. Damn, if mirrors were created by sand. When I'm looking in the water for reflections of man. Understand the mind above time when it's empty. MC tragically hit ahead by a century. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. No time to get down. Moving up, no time to get down, cause I'm moving up. Ah, check out the crabs in the bucket. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up.
And we're back. You're listening to Each for All, the Affordable Housing Candidates version tonight on Vancouver Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, and online at coopradio.org. Thanks to Canada's Good Lovelies for their fabulous harmony on Crab Bucket, a tune written by Canadian rapper Chaos. And the message in that song, No Time to Get Down Cause I'm Moving Up, is a great introduction to the next questioner for our panel on affordable housing. Lisa Rupert is the Vice President of Housing Services and Violence Prevention for the YWCA of Metro Vancouver. She works tirelessly to create housing options for single moms that are safe, affordable, and part of the community. Welcome, Lisa.
Thanks for having me.
And before we get into your questions, can you tell everyone about the innovative housing project opened last week in Strathcona, a really unique and creative partnership that literally sees women and children moving on up?
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. It's called YWCA Causeway Care House, and it's in Strathcona above a new library. So it was a partnership with the City of Vancouver. And downstairs is Nutza Matst, and I may have not done that name justice, which is Musqueam for We Are One Library. And we think it's absolutely amazing that women have this whole resource beneath them. And the second floor, that's the ground floor, the second floor of the building, which is ours, is an extension of our YWCA Crabtree Corner community services. So there'll be parenting groups, educational programs, and all sorts of different things going on that floor. And then the top four floors are housing, 21 units of rent-geared-to-income housing for single mothers and their children. And one of the things I like about all of our housing is that community is very important to us, and we really strive to create a really great environment for the families who live there. So we have community kitchens, we have an outdoor garden on the rooftop. There's a lot of great things that go on.
That's wonderful. It's such a great collaboration and partnership, and we're really pleased and timely to be announced. And on this show before, I've talked to the BC Libraries Co-op. I'm a teacher librarian by trade, and I understood that Strathcona did not have a library up until this point. So it's wonderful for the residents of Strathcona to have such a wonderful new library and for women and children to have a great place to live. So, Lisa, let's have your first question for our candidates panel, and I'm going to remind our listeners who they are: David Wong of the Green Party, Andrew Wilkinson of the BC Liberals, and David Eby of the NDP. Over to you, Lisa.
Okay. So from the perspective of someone who's in nonprofit housing, one of the positive things that's happening right now is that there are currently opportunities for nonprofits to secure provincial funding to build new affordable housing. But the funds don't typically cover the entire cost of construction, and it's really rare these days for there to be provincial funding for ongoing operating costs for these new projects. Nonprofits with mortgages and operating costs for salaries and maintenance can't afford to provide much, if any, rent geared to income housing. By that I mean housing costing only 30% of tenants' income, or the shelter portion of their income assistance checks. A lot of new units will end up being low end of market because of this, and that puts it out of reach of a lot of people, including a lot of single mother-led families, 29% of whom live below the poverty line. We need a continuum of housing, including both low end of market and rent geared to income housing to meet the need. So what will your party do to make new rent geared to income housing a priority?
And David, you're up first for answering this question. What will your party do?
Sure. I mean, some of these things are going to start to sound a bit like a broken record, because the core of it is we need the government to be involved in funding the construction of affordable housing, which includes social housing, which is the term generally used to describe that rent geared to income housing. And that's available to people on disability or on social assistance or earning very low wages. We have a poverty reduction plan as part of our platform, a commitment to establish a plan to reduce poverty across the province. And part of that includes addressing the fact that people in low-wage jobs have a very difficult time affording housing and affording anything, really. Many people earning minimum wage have to use food banks to supplement their food supply. And that is not to even speak of people living on basic social assistance or on disability. So we need a plan about reducing poverty in the province, which includes a plan about addressing the situation of women and trying to flee violence, trying to get out of a terrible situation for themselves and their families. And we need to be building housing that's suitable, appropriate, and appropriately funded. I also, although it's not particularly applicable to the situation of women fleeing violence, I do want to mention that a part of supportive housing often involves people who are struggling with disability or addiction or mental health issues. We have a robust platform as well to address some of those issues, to provide supports and housing, money that's been missing for a while. I know my wife worked at the Rainier Hotel in the downtown east side. It was a program for women to exit survival sex work and a difficult situation that those women found themselves in, many of them grappling with addiction. And that program was cut. And the supports that were in there for women to deal with the challenges that they were facing in their lives was cut. We need to have more programs like that, not fewer programs.
Andrew Wilkinson, same question. What's your party's plan for rent geared to income housing or social housing?
Well, housing's been a priority for our government in that there are a number of programs that have been initiated. Some I mentioned earlier, and I should just preface this by complimenting the YWCA on the fine job they do with facilities like Crabtree Corner and the new facility at the Strathcona Library, because this is part of the social fabric of our society, is to make sure that people in that situation have their needs addressed. And of course, the most drastic need is probably the transition house scenario, where BC government provides about $32 million annually to support 830 spaces in transition and safe houses. We recently just opened one in North Delta, actually. And last year, more than 12,000 women and children fleeing violence were assisted by provincially funded transition houses, second stage housing, and safe homes. So that's the immediate concern right out of the gate. And of course, in the longer term, we've, as I said earlier, committed $900 million to build 5,300 units of affordable housing for people in a variety of circumstances. We've created 24,000 such units already. And we're in the Housing Matters program. We've already invested more than $150 million to acquire 55 buildings across BC to protect this affordable housing cost from more expensive forms of utilization.
Thank you. And David Wong, what is the Green Party doing to address rent geared to income housing?
Well, Lisa, I really like to thank you for that question, because that is the heart of our policy. The Green Party heart is actually to look after most vulnerable, our young ones and the mothers and the grandmothers and the sisters. The most important thing is to realize that it's a community we're looking at. And what's in the community? So the question was how to fund it. One of the strongest planks in our platform for affordable housing is actually how to get funding for it. We're going to stop the speculation. We're going to look at obtaining funds from the people who actually want to profit off the backs of our citizens. One of us is we're going to introduce a 30% foreign speculators tax across the entire province. The other thing we're going to do, we're also going to start closing the loopholes, work with the federal government, and stop the potential or alleged proceeds of money laundering, and start looking at these things to stop that from inflating the land price. The other thing that we're going to look at is a more progressive property transfer tax, so that if we start making the people just buying, starting out with lower taxes, and the ones that can pay more, we'll collect from that, and that will help go towards funding programs that are really important, dear to our heart.
So, Lisa, I don't know if that answered your question. I have a follow-up.
I do have a follow-up. I wanted to specifically talk about ongoing operating costs for the new housing that all of the parties are proposing. Would your party be committed to funding operational costs for nonprofits who are providing this housing to make sure that they're sustainable?
Andrew, do you want to field that one first?
Well, I'm not an expert in housing, but the challenge, of course, is the capital cost to get these facilities built. And David's talked about building 118,000 homes at a cost of over $20 billion with no plan to fund it whatsoever. We've actually gone ahead and funded these things by spending $900 million in the current fiscal year for 5,300 units of real housing that actually gets built. The operational side of these things, then, of course, is keeping them going. And you can, if you use the right financing tools and mortgages and the like, then you can build a lot more with less capital, but then you have to find a way to service the debt. And this is the scenario that presents itself in student housing and social housing and in our own lives, is the right balance between the capital that's required to get the project going and the debt servicing cost and then the operational cost as things go by. So, as I mentioned earlier, the student housing model is looking very promising in that we'll have sufficient revenue from students to actually service the debt on independently financed student housing starting at UVic and spreading across the province. So that's one model that works in the student environment. In the affordable housing environment, it's obviously a different scenario, and we'll have to look at different models there.
So no plan for the social housing?
I'm not an expert in this field. I'd have to refer that back to the ministry people.
Yeah, I think on that follow-up question, I think it's really important to note what this government's priorities are in terms of spending. I mean, now Andrew said it twice, that we don't know how we're going to spend to build the housing that's needed in the province. We have a fully costed platform. It's really clear how we're going to pay for it. But what's interesting is that there's
not clear at all. We're getting $21 billion.
Just because you say that doesn't make it true. It's a fully costed platform.
Oh, that's a
Just let me finish. So the province says they're going to spend between $9 and $11 billion to build the Site C dam for electricity that most people agree, experts at UBC did a detailed report, we don't need it. A huge capital investment. They've got the money for this project that they exempted from the Utilities Commission oversight to even have anybody review it to make sure that this is a good thing to do. And despite the lack of need for this electricity, they're going ahead with this huge capital expenditure. And then they say, well, you know, it's impossible to build the housing that we need in our communities. No, it's not, because they're spending $9 to $11 billion on a dam we don't need when we're desperate for housing. And they say there's not enough money to build the housing that we need. So they're making choices about where to spend public money. The money is there if housing is the priority. The issue is that housing has not been the priority. And on the question of operational costs, we've got additional money for healthcare, home care outreach. We've got additional money for mental health and addictions support. They can all be provided through housing units. And in addition, there's absolutely no reason why the money through our Affordable Housing Fund couldn't be used to provide supports in buildings as required.
Okay. David Wong from the Green Party, what are your plans for covering the ongoing operating costs of social housing?
Well, it goes hand in hand. You can't just build something and allow it to go to rot, right? And there's one thing that our BC Green Party talks about is the poverty reduction plan, because we all know that poverty actually is very expensive. So So one of the things that we I would say that we would look at other jurisdictions and see how it's done properly and successfully. There's no reason why we think we can invent this whole thing on our own. I've been to Singapore. I've been to all over Germany. I've done work in New Zealand, Australia. Community planning includes a full spectrum with a with how do you call it, a plan to over its lifetime of the building. There's a cost to it. I'm an architect and I'm very visual. I can draw it out if I can do it now. But all I'm saying that there are some wonderful models that are in other jurisdictions. We can learn from it and they work. And one of the things the government does very well in many jurisdictions is they cut down on the speculation. So the land, when there's an increase and lift in the land value, the equity layer is actually put back into the housing project. So that's something that, for example, we've done here actually in the province. In UBC, for example, there's a UBC trust. So we know that for a fact that when the property value has gone up, there's a lot more equity built into it, and they can use that and tap into it as a resource of funds.
Interesting. Lisa, do you have one quick follow-up?
I do. All of the people touched upon the issue of violence against women and transitional housing as well. So our transition houses right now are completely full, particularly in the Lower Mainland. We are having to extend people for great lengths of time in a way I've never seen before, and I've been doing this for over 22 years. There's nowhere for women to go from the transition houses, and that means there's no space clearing for the women who are freshly leaving their abusers. A lot of women have to go back to their abusive partners because they don't have any other option. In the past, there have been some innovations. I was part of a CHFBC project called Opening Doors years ago, where we tried to encourage co-ops to prioritize spaces for women fleeing abuse. BC Housing's Priority Placement was a great program, but with the low vacancy rate, those programs aren't working anymore. Do you guys have any idea on what we can do to help solve this situation for women fleeing violence so that they and their children don't have to return to unsafe situations?
David Wong, Green Party, what's the plan for post-transition houses?
The most important thing here to realize that we need a healthy community. And you can't have a healthy community when we have this sort of behavior in our society. So we talk about when we build housing, we look at it as an entire holistic effort. Everything's like an ecosystem. It's tied in. So these are some of the issues that I talk personally, and I've been talking about for with my colleagues in the BC Green Party, that we have to respect everyone. Like I say, the heart of our policy is respect and collaboration and cooperation. The women of our world are the most precious, but the children, because they are I just call it, that's where my heart is. To address what your question is, that there is. I've worked with First Nations coastal communities, and I've experienced some of the thoughts and everything, and I have learned a lot. The knowledge I have, I will share with whoever forms government. And I can just speak right now that some of the examples is that we integrate the elders with the community leaders, and we bring back into our communities the respect for family, respect for human beings, and respect for women and children. So I know it's a very long answer, but I'm just saying that there's ways we can do it designed into the whole community as a holistic, integrated community.
David Eby, would you like to talk about the NDP's plan for post-transition housing?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. The situation faced by women who are fleeing violence is one where they have to decide whether they are forced to stay with an abuser or whether they have another option to go somewhere else into a transition house or find another place. And the reality is, with vacancy rates less than 1%, there are not other places to go. And there are a lot of women who could be transitioning out of a transition house, but there's nowhere to go. And the core to it, again, and here, you know, I'm repeating myself again, we have to be building more affordable housing. It is the solution to the housing crisis. And we have a very clear plan about building more affordable housing because it's something that government used to do. And when government used to do it, the housing crisis was less acute. When they stopped doing it, the housing crisis got worse and worse and worse. And now we're in the situation that we are today, where there are tent cities in Maple Ridge and Abbotsford. And so you know, women are having to choose between staying with an abuser or living outside or in the street or turning to other more desperate situations. And it's just totally unacceptable, and we can do better.
Andrew Wilkinson, what's the Liberals' plan for post-transition housing?
Well, we mentioned earlier that the critically important opportunity to leave an abusing a relationship means that we need transition houses. We spend $32 million a year to provide 24-hour coverage of staff in those facilities. We have,
but the post,
as I said, 12,000 women going through them. And then just recently our government has been addressing the issue that arises of usually a woman who's leaving a rental arrangement and has to justify to their landlord how to get their damage deposit back and how to terminate a lease. And so we've, we're in the process of implementing the arrangements with the housing authorities that will allow that situation to happen, where the tenant, that is the woman, leaving the abusing spouse in the rental facility doesn't have to justify why they're terminating the lease or why they need to get their damage deposit back. This is an important thing because it provides that important financial transition to the next level of housing.
All right. Thank you very much to the panelists. I'm going to kick it back to you there, Sandy.
Thanks so much, Robin, and thanks to our candidates. And a special thanks to Lisa Rupert of the YWCA for bringing questions on housing for single moms, women in transition, to our guests tonight. We'll take a short break and then come back with our final questioner here on Each for All on Vancouver Co-op Radio. And we're back. This is the provincial candidates' version of Each for All, and our topic tonight is affordable housing. Our final questioner is Rachel Wong, a communications student at SFU and a producer with Y57. That's Co-op Radio's news and music show aimed specifically at youth, age 18 to 35. Welcome, Rachel.
Hi, Sandy. Thank you.
We asked you to be our youth correspondent and find out what young people are thinking about and hoping for in relation to affordable housing. Tell us a bit about what you came up with.
For sure. So definitely, like, the biggest thing that when I was talking to a lot of people that are my age, as well as just like doing some research, one of the resources that I came across was Generation Squeeze. So thank you to Sandy for pointing me to that. But I guess the most striking thing that I saw was the fact that today it's like it takes 23 years for people that are in my generation to come up and even save up for a 20% down payment. Now, I'm turning 21 on Sunday, and that's frightening because, like, I'm hoping to, so I'm graduating in 2 years, and I'm hoping to hopefully break into the housing market. Right now, though, that sounds a little ridiculous. It seems very ridiculous because I should have been saving a long time ago, or at least I would have hoped that my parents had come up with a trust fund. So I guess I wanted to know from the candidates, and thank you so much for being here and for taking the time out of your guys' busy schedules to talk to us. But I wanted to know what your attitude was towards the demographic of 25 to 34, and even people like myself who are turning 21, so a lot younger, and what your party's plans were to help young people gain access into the rental and housing market.
So, Andrew Wilkinson from the BC Liberals, what's what's your party's plan?
Well, interestingly, Generation Squeeze, under the guidance of Paul Kershaw, has pointed out some important societal issues about how the cost of taking care of the interests of the more senior generation have effectively depleted the available resources for the younger generation. Now, this is not new. People have been talking about this for centuries. But nonetheless, with the growing age of our population and the longer duration of adult care past age 70, it's becoming a more pressing issue. On the more specific issue of young people and financing, you know, I look at my own situation. I was destitute at age 30, bought a house when I was 35. And so be optimistic. 21 is very young to be talking about getting into the housing market. I'm astounded that you're that well organized. And the other thing that we've done to assist students, just this last budget, we've cut the student debt, the student loan interest rate in half by getting rid of the above prime component. And that should save the average student about $2,000 in debt off their student loans. Only about 30% of our full-time students actually take out interest-free student loans. But nonetheless, those who do, and I was one of them, I'm very glad to know that we're cutting that interest rate down to 2.5%. When I left my training, it was 22%.
David Wong from the Green Party, do you want to speak to your party's plans for helping younger people find rental and rental housing and purchase housing?
Yeah, it's a very important question, Rachel. I hear you because I got two young ones and they're saying the same thing right now. Well, the first thing we talk about all the time is this runaway speculative market. The BC Greens are going to clamp down and cool down this whole market of residential real estate speculation. We've already seen what has just happened. There was a small little 15% tax was placed. And what happened? The ALR started to get affected. And that started moving up, right? So we know that this capital moves around whatever you do. So the BC Green Party will put a 30% tax across the entire province in an effort to slow down the speculation. We're also going to, we talked about increasing the supply of affordable accommodation. How are we going to do that? Well, there's some ideas that we've tossed around, and I think some have merit. I spoke earlier about tweaking, working and collaboratively with the municipal government. For example, City of Vancouver, they've got existing zoning laws in place, and we know it's very easy for them to just easily tweak the zoning. It's a change of the wording, and that can easily free up a whole bunch of housing. Single-family homes, for example, the RS1 and the RT, the little duplex zones, if we can make it allow them to just tweak the wording to allow and permit secondary suites or multiple conversion dwelling units, for that to happen, we'll free up, we'll double that supply overnight. Okay, so that's a simple solution we can do immediately. And of course, we're going to protect landlord and tenant by strengthening the laws there. And, of course, maintain and enhance existing support programs.
Thank you. And David Eby from the NDP.
Yeah, it's a really interesting time to be a millennial in Vancouver. Van City says that millennials have negative discretionary income in the city of Vancouver. And a lot of that is due to ever-escalating levels of rents that people have to pay, not just when they're going to school, but when they start work. And a big solution to this problem is the drastic need to build more affordable rental housing for people in the city of Vancouver. And in addition to that, the cost for young families of childcare. I know that our family feels incredibly fortunate to be able to pay and to have the opportunity to pay $17,000 a year for childcare for our two-year-old. But with that kind of rate for childcare at UBC, and that's... We are able to access that because my wife has gone back to school. She's a student at UBC. Most people couldn't get their child into that childcare. To have access to that is a great privilege to pay $17,000 a year. So we also need to dramatically improve childcare. That's why so few people can actually even afford to have children. The replacement population replacement rate in Vancouver is around 0.7%. It needs to be about 2%. Higher than 2 to replace the population. And, you know, if you can't afford to have kids, you can't afford an apartment with a second bedroom, The demands of millennials are not extreme. They're saying, just give us a chance. And I think that one of the things that's really been missing is any kind of a plan for the future of our city, which includes young people. And as they're increasingly priced out of Vancouver, and the collective shrug about, well, you know, I never thought that I should be able to afford anything in Vancouver. Why do you think you should be able to afford to stay in Vancouver? Is one that at least would be easier to swallow if there was decent transit. But there's not even decent transit out to the outlying areas of Vancouver, of Metro Vancouver. So there's lots to be done. Better transit, better housing, better childcare, all part of the fully costed NDP platform, which will make a really big difference for young families in Vancouver.
Thank you. Rachel, do you have any follow-up?
I do, but I did want to point out, yeah, I do live in Surrey, and the transit issue is definitely a really big thing that we're worried about. So I really am looking forward to, like, whoever comes into power, like, please do something about the transit out in the outlying areas. But I guess the last thing I wanted to ask is, like, you know, fast forward to May 10th, one of you has been elected in, your government has been elected in, and suddenly you find yourself as the Minister of Housing. And what is your first act as housing?
David Wong, Green Party.
First thing I will do is we'll do away with this adversarial approach to government. We're going to encourage and work with, cooperate with different levels of government, the federal, because we need them, and municipal. Saying that it's important to realize that it's at the municipal level that the actual land use is governed. So without their support and without their cooperation, we can't get what we want done. And that's the first thing I would do is actually build that relationship and nurture it and work collaboratively. And that's the BC Green.
Andrew Wilkinson from the BC Liberals.
Yes, follow through on a few important things, which is creating thousands of affordable student housing rental units by following the alternative financing vehicle arrangement that we've already initiated at UVic. Secondly, by implementing and following through on the Home Partnership Program, which provides second mortgage financing free of interest to first-time purchasers, up to $750,000 of equity with a $37,500 second mortgage that's available to those purchasers. And thirdly, of course, we'll follow through with the raising the first-time home buyers program exemption to $500,000 and saving first-time buyers up to $8,000.
And David Eby from the NDP.
The first thing I would do if I were the housing minister is I would ask all of the ministries to give me a list of all of the public property that they had in their purview that would be appropriate for housing developments. And we would use those to kickstart a massive build of affordable housing across the province, rental housing, housing for workers, students, and seniors, housing for purchase, because one of the biggest costs in affordable housing is land, and the province and the cities have land available, and we would start that right away. The only answer to that question should be build more affordable housing. If you're the housing minister, that should be job number one, day number one, because we have a supply crisis in affordable housing.
But David, you're still missing $21 billion you need to build these units. Where's that going
from? I am so offended by this. Your government is spending $9 to $11 billion for a dam for electricity that we don't need, and I did not want to curse.
Self-financing.
I did not want to curse on the radio, but this dam is going to bankrupt BC Hydro. It's electricity we don't need. It floods agricultural land, and it comes at the cost of doing other things like building affordable housing that we desperately need.
We did
the absence of which is hurting the absence of which is hurting our local economy. The absence of which affordable housing is hurting our local economy very badly here in Metro Vancouver, and it needs to be addressed.
Sincere thanks to our panelists. Our panelists tonight have been David Wong from the Green Party, Andrew Wilkinson from the BC Liberals, and David Eby from the NDP. Gentlemen, this has been a real enlightening discussion. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Back to you,
thanks,
Sandy.
Robin.
Thanks so much, Rachel Wong from Y57, the youth program on Vancouver Co-op Radio. Thank you to our guests. One quick note, a very special film on the housing issue, Vancouver No Fixed Address, will be playing at the Doxa Film Festival on May 6th at 7 o'clock in the evening. Go to doxafestival.ca for more information. Thank you to everyone for joining us this evening. I'm Sandy Goldman for Robin Puga and all our guests. Thanks for listening and have a cooperative week.
I ain't got no home, I'm just a roaming round. Just a wandering worker, I go from town to town. And the police make it hard where...